Hello and welcome to the TalkSpot. I'm Tim Scott, and today I have with me Helena Teixeira. She's the Director of the Department of Research, Training and Documentation at the National Institute of Legal Medicine and Forensic Sciences in Portugal, and also a professor at the University of Coimbra. Welcome, Helena.
Well, thank you so much, Tim. I'm very happy to be here with you in the TalkSpot, and hello also to our dear toxicologists. Thank you for your invitation, Tim.
Yes, you're welcome. Great to have you here with us. That's a very illustrious title, Helena, you've got there. What actually is your role at the Institute?
Well, the base is forensic toxicology. And I started at the Institute when I graduated from the surgical sciences in 1999. But I left a little bit to pharmacy because then all my career was with the medicine faculty, where I did my master in experimental pathology, and then I have done my PhD on biomedical sciences. But I entered right away to the National Institute of Legal Medicine. It was only that time, it was only Institute of Legal Medicine of Coimbra. And I wanted to do an internship, and I entered there doing an internship in the forensic toxicology lab. In fact, I entered the career, and the career is legal medicine superior specialist. And then I had the chance for almost 4 years to be the director of the forensic toxicology laboratory, but in Oporto, because I'm in Coimbra in the center. And then I received a very interesting invitation to become the national director of this department that is related to all the teaching, the courses, everything that we have in the Institute, because we organize different courses. I have one of these courses, the superior degree on legal medicine. We have another one on psychiatry, on a special matter in medicine. And we are responsible for all the investigation that is done in the Institute, namely masters, PhD, postdocs, everything. And we are responsible for everything that is research and teaching in our Institute, in all the areas that we have in our Institute, in fact.
Wow, lots of things going on. Do you do casework as well at the Institute?
Well, now it is more difficult, but I do when I have students. So I do that when I have the students with me. And I had, these last ones were two PhDs, and I also have students from the Faculty of Medicine of master degrees. But each day, no, because I'm not now in the lab, and I do more a director thing. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. I try to mix both things.
Lots of paperwork, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, the higher you go in our field, the further you get away from the bench.
Well, in fact, you go higher because you mix lots of things. And being also a professor in the Faculty of Medicine opens me the opportunity also to continue with the investigation with the students. And at the same time, I have another position that it's very interesting, that I belong to the Drug Evaluation Commission of the Regulatory Authority for Drugs and Pharmaceutical Products in Portugal. It's named Infarmed. And I'm a scientific evaluator in the area of toxicology, in clinical trials of drugs, and in the market introduction of new drugs. So this is a very interesting and different thing. When you work with forensics and you do analysis in antemortem and postmortem samples, but also are before all of this, when you have to evaluate if a drug has all the assays done, performed to be included in the market. And so it was a challenge because it was a very different thing to do, but also being a little bit part of clinical toxicology. So you mix everything. And I am now all the things together. So it's very, very interesting.
Oh, that's good. It's good to have a job that you love.
Yeah, that's true. That's very important since you almost are all your time at work and less time at home. So
yeah.
You must be happy with what you do.
So you're doing a lot of research, obviously. Let's talk about some of your recent research that you've done. You published a couple of papers in the last couple of years about detection of NPS in Portugal synthetic cathinones and synthetic cannabinoids. Tell us about that research.
Well, that's interesting, Tim, because that was part of two challenging works to show another part of toxicology, not only when you have a lab with all the equipment and everything, and also to be aware that sometimes you don't have it. And in fact, those works belong to two PhD theses that were performed by two students who had done their master thesis with me here in Coimbra, and who asked me to continue with them to do their PhDs. However, since they both are from the island of Madeira, where I think most of our colleagues were in 2013 in our meeting, it was not possible for them to do the work in our forensic toxicology lab here at the Legal Medicine Institute, because it was a four-year work and they could not leave their families to come to Coimbra. And our idea also of carrying out a study with synthetic cannabinoids and synthetic cathinones came from the fact that Madeira has a huge problem with these substances, greater than what we have here in mainland Portugal. As you may imagine, around more or less 2007, 2008, Madeira was confronted with huge cases of hospitalization due to drug intoxication, and initially without any association with NPS, but many resulted in deaths. In fact, our first smart shop in Portugal, I don't know in your countries, but here in Portugal, it dates from 2007. And even though having this information of all the smart shops, the fact that forensic analysis gave negative results for classic drugs, because all the analysis, all the cases we have in Madeira come to Coimbra, to the forensic toxicology lab. And since the classic drugs, opioids, cocaine, amphetamines, and cannabinoids were negative, it raised the suspicion of the existence and prevalence of another type of substances. And then we started with this reality of NPS. And Madeira was even the first place that took the first step in drafting a legislative decree in 2012 in order to mitigate the spread of this type of substances in the region. And Portugal, the mainland, approving it in the following year in 2013 in a national legislation. And in fact, we have been seeing that the presence of new compounds in herbal products which were not previously identified has been more frequent, and the variety of modifications in molecules and the speed which they enter on the market are challenging in its assessment. And I can tell you, Tim, that the main challenges we had were not really related with the distance between me and them, since they were already capable of doing the technical part with perfect autonomy, but were related with the analytical techniques they have there in the University of Madeira and with the standards, because our legislation do not allow us, Legal Medicine Institute, to borrow pure drug analytical standards to other labs that are not forensic labs.
Yes, we have similar kinds of things here, yeah.
Yeah, we are authorized to import them, but we cannot borrow to other labs. But as we say here in Portugal, we have a proverb that says that who doesn't have a dog hunts with a cat. And so, in fact, something that can also be drawn from these studies is the importance of finding other methodologies, even if some do not satisfy with regard to forensic biological sample analysis, where we all know that we need to reach very low concentrations. But we cannot forget that we still have many countries with some difficulty in acquiring more powerful equipments, for example, with tandem mass spectrometry. That is very important, and particularly to young scientists, when you think that you can only work with powerful tools, wonderful internal standards, and it's not true. You can do. Of course, you have to respect some of the principles that may allow other substances. But that it's very, very good. And this is one of the reasons that we wanted to perform analytical and in vitro cytotoxicity studies with synthetic cannabinoids and cathinones found specific in sized herbal incenses. And here, let me join you collaboration that we had. It was very important because we have a very close collaboration here, the Legal Medicine Institute, with the second forensic institute that we have in Portugal. It's the criminal police, because this institution, the police, is responsible, among other things, for the seizure of drugs in Portugal. And so they borrowed us some of the science material they had, both with cannabinoids and synthetic ketones. And we were able to have methodologies to isolate and to understand what were the compounds that we had in the samples that they sent us. And we have had a very interesting conclusions. And I think the more important conclusion that we took there was the inconsistency that we verified among the analyzed samples in terms of qualitative and even quantitative compositions. And even the products that were sold with the same commercial name had a different content, as well as we observed that the same mixture was sold under different brand names. So this diversity in composition could lead us to serious consequences, since some consumers that start using NPS are unaware of the dose, the durability, and even the type of the generated effects.
Yeah, it's like what we're seeing with benzodiazepines at the moment, which is not one of the ones that we're talking about here, but Xanax, which is around everywhere. Everybody just calls it Xanax now on the street, but it could be anything. It could be literally any kind of benzodiazepine or something else entirely, even sometimes.
Yeah, we have not very frequently, but the problem that we are having with that that you are talking about, Tim, is the sexual assaults that we are starting having here, not with GHB, that everybody connected it with GHB. And now the problem that we have in Portugal is, in fact, with benzodiazepines. And there's mixtures and everything that is sold out in a strange way, in fact. I don't know if I can say this, but in fact, we are going to write a brief article to our TF bulletin. I was kindly asked to do it by the dearest Rebecca and Jennifer. So I'm pretty much deciding to do something about what happened between 2013 in Madeira when we had a meeting and nowadays, what is the challenging and, in fact, are the NPS.
Oh, well, we're going to have a few spoilers maybe for the bulletin episode that Peter will be doing soon for that. But I was surprised to see with your synthetic cannabinoid herbal mixtures, you're seeing some of the JWH compounds. Now, I thought they were gone, Helena, but they're back. Or have you been seeing them all along?
You are asking me particularly here. The synthetic cannabinoids apprehended from our police, and they have mixtures. Mainly we found the GWH compounds, the 18, the 122, 73, 210, that I recall. And we had Apinaca and CP and MAM. And it was very interesting also to see adulterants such as oleamide, vitamin E, and vitamin E acetate. But there was also in that something that I was not an expert. So we had someone in the university lab that was an expert in cytotoxicity. But it was very interesting. For me, it was a challenge. It's also very good for us when we learn a little bit about other things. And it was a little out of the box in terms of forensic toxicology, but pretty much related to the concern that we have in clinical toxicology cases. That's why we decided to analyze the cytotoxicity of these seized herbal extracts. And it was something that when we've done that, and to our best of our knowledge, the study with the synthetic cannabinoids was the first to evaluate the cytotoxicity of this mixture in herbal extracts in human lung cells. So it was very interesting to understand the relationship of these substances and the cytotoxicity they induced in a concentration-dependent manner, and that it's very important when we start analyzing the problems with the use of cannabinoids, with the legalizing cannabinoids, because now we cannot only talk about phytocannabinoids, and the synthetics are definitely a challenge and worse.
So when were these seizures actually seized by the police? Was it quite recent?
Yeah. And to explain to you a little bit, in Portugal, we have two main forensic institutions. We have our Legal Medicine Institute, and we have the criminal police. The criminal police, as among other things, but related to toxicology, they don't do lots of things. They only do analysis in non-biological samples, and in fact, in the drug they apprehend. But related to NPS, they're asking for our help, the Legal Medicine Institute, as well as universities that do research in this area. All the drug that enter in Portugal and everything that is detected in Portugal, clandestine labs, or if a drug comes to a beach or something, it's the police that has all these drugs. Sometimes we have connection also when you have a dead person and in a place where you have lots of drugs. We must have part of the drug to do the analysis, but the main quantity, we are not allowed to stay with it. This is a very strict and different part that we have in our institutions. But what do we do that they do not do? In fact, in our National Institute, we have different areas. We have a psychiatry and psychology area. We have the forensic genetic laboratory. We have the clinical medicine related to sexual assaults. We have the post-mortem analysis, the pathology with the autopsies. And of course, we have the forensic toxicology. And we also have included in the pathology service the histology analysis. Before 2001, we had, in fact, only three institutes: the Institute, Legal Medicine Institute of Porto, the one of Coimbra, the one in Lisbon. And the president that we have here in Coimbra became the national president. And we are now all connected. We have only a national institute with three delegations. And then we have what we call the legal medicine cabinets distributed around the country, but only to perform the autopsies and to have clinical examinations of labor accidents, panel issues, and all the cases that need toxicology come to the delegations, to the three labs that we have in Portugal. This is very good because before that, each institute could perform the analysis as they wanted. I'm not saying like that with this, that if someone died at the north, would have a result different from the center of the south. But in fact, with this national thing, and all the labs are accredited now, and so we all work exactly the same way. And another good thing is that if you have, for instance, more intoxications of carbon monoxide in the north of Portugal, we can have the lab of the north doing those analyses and not spend that time with the other labs. So we can change with the chain of custody. We can send the samples. And like this, we can profit of having more techniques in other labs and to join all the work. So I think this was a very, very good thing in Portugal to have everything nationally, because we only have one president and we have three directors, but we have to work all the same way.
It sounds like a good setup. I mean, lots of people are starting to talk about, you know, having a center of excellence where you can send particular things, you know, a lab that does, maybe a lab that specializes in NPS or a lab that specializes in pesticides or something. It is extremely difficult for one lab to maintain methods for all of these different things. But most labs have to try because they don't have the kind of partnerships that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's true. Portugal is not a big country, so it's easier for us even to bring the samples to each lab, because our driver goes fast, 1 hour, 1 hour and a half, and to put the samples in each city. So I believe that in Australia, Brazil, and other huge countries and America, it would be definitely difficult. But here, yeah, fortunately, we can try to do that. And every time we're talking about money and resources and to manage the money, and Portugal is not very, very good nowadays. And so it's also very important for us to reduce some of the costs that validating a methodology, buying a new equipment that you might have. So all the labs do all the things, because that is the main analysis that we have, in fact.
Talking about having an expansive scope of testing and all that kind of stuff, you wrote an editorial quite a few years ago now in Analytical and Bioanalytical Chemistry, and a quote from that, which I remember, which I pulled up before we came on here. This is what you said. Undoubtedly, the future may provide greater and greater toxicological information, but it is not a certainty that this will add interpretive clarity for the forensic toxicologist. I think that was such a... This was like 10 years ago. I think that was such a prescient statement, because we are developing more and more methods all the time. We can detect more and more drugs where we're validating to a much greater extent than we used to. But is it really helping us to interpret the levels in, you know, a post-mortem case, for example? Are we any closer to actually being able to interpret those levels? What do you think?
It's very interesting, your question, Tim. And this poses us to another issue. I don't know, but well, I know more or less when we are at TF meetings, we understand a little bit the relationship between toxicologists and the medical doctors, the pathologists that do the report and have to do the interpretation. Is in fact that we are always trying to help the pathologists in making a conclusion when they have this or that substance. But I think we have the tools to do that. Sometimes when they ask for help, you are not able to conclude only, well, of course, if you have a lethal dose and you can join a little bit with what you were expecting to have. But the problem is that for you to make a final conclusion and to understand what is going on, you have to have other information that we toxicologists, we do not have. The pathologists have the results from histology, sometimes very, very important to understand. And they have other issues like the analysis of the corpse. What I think is that sometimes we are having more and more equipment and ways of analyzing the substances. But as I usually say also, we are like the athlete and the doping. When you discover the substance that the athlete is using and you start analyzing it, the athlete changed it already. It's exactly what is happening with NPS. And so the conclusion, even with those new substances that are entering in the market, I feel that our pathologists are not prepared to make the conclusion, since we are having new things, new mechanism of action. And so you have to have an effort to join both ideas, toxicology and pathology. And even when you have discovery of a substance, you have to analyze the person itself. Also, the chronic consumption that we have now, it's not easy. Like 15 years ago, what we had here in means of concentration of alcohol in that person that sometimes was an intoxication due to alcohol was like 2.5 grams per liter. And we had lots of cases 15, 20 years ago where this concentration was considered the responsible for that. Nowadays in Portugal, perhaps I should not say this, it's not good for our people, but people are driving with 4.71 grams per liter alcohol. And they are living people, they are not that. And another issue, in Portugal, the toxicologist only perform what the pathology asks you to do. So the pathologist must be aware of the substances. And of course, if we do like a GCMS where and you find other substances that were not required, of course, we give that result to the pathologist. But the main problem here is that you can have situations where you don't ask everything. And nowadays with the NPS, you can have someone that died. People say, what was his consumption? And he says, well, it was marijuana. And all of a sudden, you don't have only marijuana. And in fact, you cannot even have almost anything related to THC, and you only have synthetic cannabinoids. So it is a true challenge. We cannot forget that.
Yeah, I think that partnership, again, talking about partnerships, it works best, I feel, when you have that kind of feedback between, let's say, the pathologist and the toxicologist if it's a coronial case, because the pathologist will have some information, the toxicologist will have some information. The toxicologist may see things in their screens and say, hey, I think we should pursue this. The pathologist may see things in what they're doing. Maybe, you know, they see crystals in the kidneys and they say, hey, why don't we test for ethylene glycol? That could be something to look for here. So the idea of just the pathologist right at the start deciding what toxicology they want and the toxicologist just doing it and giving it back to them and that's the end of it, I think that really doesn't work so well. It probably works in a lot of cases, but for those unique cases, it doesn't work very well.
Yeah, that is true. And we have different colleagues. You have the ones that I think the youngest one even more connected to us in nowadays, because we have some of them medical doctors that don't understand, or they think you are not going to tell me what to do specifically related to this and that. But what we have now, in fact, it's a different image. We work together. They ask us lots of time for our opinion, even to do the report, or even if they go to court, because they are the responsible for the autopsy. And fortunately, we are very pretty much connected to them. We are not at the autopsies, but they talk to us very much, because fortunately now, our medical doctors and pathology understand that if they do not give us all the information, since we are not going to the criminal scene investigation, we are not going to autopsy, they are not going to be able to conclude the autopsy report. So 20 years ago, it could be difficult because the oldest pathologist had a different idea and seeing the science. But fortunately, nowadays, since we are not there, they give us as much as they can of the info. Even we had some issues like 20 years ago that we had dead people and everything that was near the body, bottles or everything, stayed at the police and didn't came with the body. So we changed it again with the criminal police in order to tell them, okay, this is a proof that you need to have in your archives. But we need it to do the analysis in order to connect what we have here. And we had to also to give them some classes. I remember one when we had to explain to them why we needed the spoon or the syringe in a heroin death, because what we only had was morphine. And it was very important to understand what we have there. So we starting doing this teaching, as we are, if I can say this, to the police and also the pathologists. And fortunately, even though we are at the lab, we can have the information getting to us. And that is very interesting, the evolution, Tim, even with what happens in our country, if I may tell you. In Portugal, unfortunately, we have lots of work. But the way we have the organization here, it's not easy. Of course, I would love to say only beautiful things about our area. And I have a wonderful feeling about our area, but about the opportunities in Portugal, it's a different and more difficult challenge. Because in fact, as I told you, we are a public institution. Our lab will do lots of things, so we needed to have lots of, even more people in our labs. We only have three. We do all the road traffic surveillance analysis, the living people, when you have to confirm alcohol after the breath analysis when required by the victim, the driver, or when you have to confirm a positive screening test in saliva or urine for drugs of abuse. Here, it's always blood confirmation from our labs. We do all the analysis, the post-mortem analysis, accidents, suicides, homicides, or unknown deaths. All the post-mortem analysis related to sexual assaults that enter court and to police investigation. And we also help hospitals when they have a suspicion of intoxication and they want our help to identify the agent, more or less. But since we are billing to a public administration, the Ministry of Justice, and I'm not sure you are aware of our career situation, even though it is crucial to have more people in our labs, since people are retiring, the government doesn't give you any tools that allow you to hire new employees, to have new people in our labs. And even for those who are belong to the institution, to the career, as I do, our career, as we say here in Portugal, is frozen for almost 50 years without any progression. So in this way, although young people who finish their university studies wish to enter a public service, the problem is that if I give you an idea, because I think it's important also for the colleagues to understand what happens in our country. We have colleagues that come to Portugal, mainly the sweet colleagues from Brazil, since the language is the same, and they ask to come to our labs to do internships. And in fact, our laboratories at the moment, more or less, the youngest person is almost 50 years old. And this is definitely not good. And Tim, I remember when I started, I had colleagues from 25 to 65. But as I usually say, this has to change someday, because those who are here today, they will retire in about 15 years, right? I don't know. The country is putting higher and higher the retirement. So I don't know if I have 90 years old and I'll still be working at the lab.
Have you mentioned contact with Brazilian colleagues there. Have you had a lot of contact with colleagues in Brazil or South America more generally throughout your career?
Yeah. In fact, you know that, as we all usually say, Portugal and Spain are brothers, but also Brazil. Brazil and Portugal, we are very much connected, perhaps because the language is easy, because it's the same. The sound sometimes is different, and sometimes they do not understand us Portuguese, but we understand them. And in fact, I have very good friends in Brazil, Alice Tracin, José Luis Costa, Bruno de Martínez, and Eduardo, who also invited me to write a second chapter in a book with them. So it's wonderful to have them. So we receive every time they want and we have Roni last year with us in the lab of Lisbon. And we love to have the colleagues in Portugal every time they want to be here. No, you were talking of South America. Well, South America, I had also a very good connection with Luis. When we organized, Luis organized the meeting after I organized here in Portugal. It was very kind also to ask me to be the president of the second forensic toxicology meeting of Spanish and Portuguese language, because we could manage in Madeira in 2013 and in Argentina. And I hope when the meeting returns to a Spanish language or Portuguese language, also to continue this, because it was very interesting to do also a joint meeting with the Spanish and Portuguese language, where we were able to talk a little bit about our issues and the things we had related. So it was a wonderful also this connection. And well, but with all the colleagues, you know, I think we create lots of friends in TIAFT. And in fact, this is what we have together, is this connection, is when we talk about our problems and we can help each other when we have difficulties in each country. And in your country and in Australia, I had my best and my happiest moment when I was very honored to receive the TIAFT Achievement Award there.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I think what we do your heart, you know, but it's wonderful to have this connection. And we start talking with the colleagues as we knew yesterday. So this is the best thing that we have in TIA, to spread our knowledge, but also our problems, and not being afraid of saying the things that we do not know how to do or that we have difficulties. That's the way we can grow up.
Yeah, that's what we like to do on the podcast as well, is point out all the problems with forensic toxicology. But you might not remember this, Helena, but many years ago, you were the first person that I ever reached out to, sort of outside my own lab, to ask for help with something. You probably don't even remember this, but I was working, a young forensic toxicologist, probably only a couple of years, been in the lab, and I was developing a method on something. I can't remember what it was. And I was reading some papers, and you had published a paper doing a solid phase extraction or something. And I thought, I'll just send her an email. I didn't know you at all, but I thought I'll send her an email and see if she can give me some advice. And you were so...
I hope I helped you.
You did. You were so generous and like responded really quickly and stuff. And that is sort of when I thought, actually, gee, I think this is going to be a good field to be in, because that's what I found through my career as well, is forensic toxicologists around the world are very, very generous and very collegial with each other. Everyone wants to help each other. It's not a competition to see who's the best. We all want to promote the field.
Yeah, I didn't remember that. So when we do your heart with your heart, I think it's wonderful. It's wonderful. So nice to share that with me. I didn't remember.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, Helena. This was a great conversation.
Tim, thank you so much. It was wonderful to see you again and, to chat a little bit with you. And I hope all the colleagues are well and we'll meet soon. Thank you. It was an honor for me to be here with you, Tim. Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Registration is now open for the 61st annual TAFT meeting, taking place from the 2nd to the 6th of September 2024 in St. Gallen, Switzerland. The early bird rate is only available until May 31st, so be sure to register soon for the reduced rate at www.taft2024.org. We look forward to welcoming you to St. Gallen for an inspiring, engaging, and enlightening conference.